We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
And welcome to In the Know, the Hornets 24/7 podcast. Your knowledgeable hosts are Michael McNamara.
Me and a grizzly bear, I'm betting on me.
And me, Ryan Schwan.
I've been playing some Dungeons & Dragons because I'm really cool like that.
Let's get it started. All Hornets, all the time.
Welcome to the show. Once again, we're getting together to talk about the Hornets and free agency this time. I'm joined, as usual, by Michael McNamara and Jason Calmes. We will be going through a couple different scenarios of how we would think free agency, well, we would like free agency to pan out. And, you know, just give some ideas out there, people that you could target. And hopefully, you know, maybe surprise some of you about who we're picking. Michael, which scenario would you like to start with?
So I think yesterday on our podcast we talked about our own free agents, who we would target, who would want to stay, and who would we want to see hit the road. It seemed like both of us wanted to keep some of the small guys. It really didn't matter what else was going around. They were cheap enough. There's really two huge Hornets free agents, David West and Carl Landry. And my contention was that both of those guys are kind of dependent on where this whole Chris Paul thing goes. If he says, look, I'm going to be out of here at the end of the year, I'll work with you and try to find a spot to trade me, you know, you just let those guys go. If not, then you go for it all this year. So I guess what I've kind of done is mapped out a list of what do you do if you take option A, you know, Chris Paul's gone, time to blow it up and rebuild. And then if you do option B, you know, just go for it all and hope you could hold on to Paul. So let's start with optimism first. I guess I'll throw it back to you. Chris Paul says, hey, I don't know what I want to do. But I do love it here. Show me that we could be a winner, and you guys will be the first person I talk to when free agency starts. Go out and sign David West. What guys are you looking at?
So, the first thing I want to say is, unfortunately, it's my opinion that this particular free agency class is rather weak. Every single player that, you know, I kind of feel like they could actually benefit and make this team help is a restricted free agent or is pretty likely to get a tremendous contract from some big team like the Nets that has a lot of money to spend.
Right. So does it matter that the free agent class is weak? Because theoretically, if it was strong, we wouldn't. Either way, if there's five top tier guys or 10, we wouldn't be able to afford them, so.
Well, I'm not even looking necessarily for top-tier guys. I mean, I really legitimately think that you can fill in with good players around probably the three primary players the Hornets have right now and make a nice run for it.
But you don't even see that there.
I don't see. I mean, so here's the issue with good players in the NBA. Good players in the NBA most of the time get paid like stars.
Right.
And it's just one of the weird, freaky things about how players get paid. And so you go down this list and of free agents, and the ones who are free agents, they're really free agents for a reason a lot of the time. I mean, David West would not be a free agent if his contract hadn't been structured in such a way that signing an extension would have limited his salary ridiculously.
Right.
I mean, the number of good players hitting pure free agency is really limited here. And, I mean, it's basically down to, you know, Nene is the only one I'm like, wow, he's pretty good. All the rest of the ones that I would say that for, like Marc Gasol, are restricted.
Right, but, I mean, the one thing that the Hornets will have this year that they wouldn't have had in any other free agent class is this, Section 14 that I'm all excited about, amnesty. So I say we include that when we talk about guys, because in reality, there's at least 10 teams that will not be able to bid on the amnesty waiver wire. So you'll have guys being amnestied, and, those are essentially free agents, and free agents that the Hornets or any team that puts in a waiver wire bid should be able to get below market value. So I think when you include those guys, I think you're right. There's not any guys who are going to necessarily put the Hornets over the top. But I think that, you know, the Hornets could target anywhere between 15 and 30 guys who could be a solid part of their rotation.
Right. So, and I've said this before, on a previous podcast, and I think in a post as well. If we're trying to keep Chris Paul, I really don't think, I think we've got to swing for the fences. And so I'm honestly in the boat where I would just let our good buddy David West walk away, which I said in Wednesday's podcast. And I would throw a maximum contract at Marc Gasol.
Wow.
And I'm sure half the people are like, are you crazy? Because we have Okafor, so we don't need a center that badly. It's not the position of need. But in my opinion, Emeka Okafor has two things going for him. A, Marc Gasol is actually a high post player. They'll have some defensive issues, him and Okafor next to each other. But you could give that a try if you don't have a good offer for Okafor. But I am actually willing to bet that after last year's performance, you could actually turn Okafor into a good wing player, someone to put next to our buddy Trevor Ariza. So or
like the Iguodala type?
I don't know if you can get that good.
Okay.
But I think you could get something similar. I mean, Iguodala would be the person I would, I've always had, a big crush on Iguodala. I'm one of those guys who I don't look at the scoring numbers and really give that much of a damn. I really believe in well-rounded players. You got to have a whole bunch of attributes, a whole bunch of things you bring to the table. Because, NBA is a game of inches. If you get, slight advantages in multiple categories, I mean, we're only talking games that are decided by 8 points. So if you got a player who can give you advantages in 3 or 4 categories, that's going to make you a big difference. Sending Okafor out for someone like Iguodala or something like that. Marc Gasol, the reason why I'm thinking Marc Gasol more than anybody else, and it used to be Nene. Earlier in the year, I was doing the same thing with Nene. It's purely age. I mean, Marc Gasol's a young man, and Nene's 29. So you don't swing for the fences with a 29-year-old and hope to build a dynasty. You swing for the fences with one of the top 5 centers in the league.
Whoa.
Who's pretty young. What, you don't think he's one of the top five?
No.
Really?
No, I don't.
Okay, name.
Oh, here we go.
Five better than him. I mean,
this is where it's going to be tough because, you know, am I going to be talking about guys who play center or guys that you consider pure centers?
Do it however you want. Big men. Big men who are capable of playing near the basket.
Okay, well then, I mean, right? I mean, obviously, it's going to be Dwight Howard. I don't think anybody would argue with that. I guess here's again a technicality. I mean, Nene would be okay. One.
No, I can give you Nene.
Okay. I don't know how many of the Lakers bigs you're going to let me count as a center, but I would take both Bynum and Gasol. But give me just one of those, and I'll be fine.
No, take both of them.
Okay. Thanks. You're being very generous.
Yes.
If we're talking about you could guarantee me health, which obviously you can't, but, you know, just in a vacuum, I would take Bogut. I would take Al Horford. It starts to get tough. Is Duncan a center? But, no.
At this point, Duncan's not good enough anymore.
I think he's a good player. I guess my bigger problem with Marc Gasol is, okay, you're talking about this being a part of keeping Chris Paul. I don't think he's the type of center that ideally you put next to Chris Paul. I mean, I would put, even if they're the same price, I would put DeAndre Jordan next to Chris Paul before Gasol, and then you're talking about age again. He's even younger, has more upside. So
you actually think DeAndre Jordan is going to be an elite center for? I didn't say that.
I didn't say he's better than Marc Gasol. I said he's better if I had to pair somebody with Paul. You know, if I was starting a franchise and had to pick between Gasol and Jordan, I would pick Gasol. But if my franchise already had Chris Paul at the point, I would put Jordan there. I would also, in this free agent class, go after Chandler harder than Gasol. So that's all I'm saying is if it's Chris Paul. Now, if you want to go and get Gasol knowing you're going to lose Chris Paul, that's a different story. But if Paul's going to be here and that's part of your plan, I just don't think it's a perfect fit.
We have very differing opinions of Gasol then. I actually see Gasol as a better David West in a lot of respects. He's bigger, of course. He's stronger. He can hit the same mid-range jump shot at West. I mean, his numbers are only fractionally worse. And he actually is one of the better passers in the game from the high post. I think we've seen games where West has been positioned in the high post and he's been able to find Okafor in like the high-low game. I mean, he is not the natural passer that Gasol is, so I just prefer Gasol. Gasol is also an infinitely better rebounder than West, which isn't, you know, hard to do because West is a pretty lousy rebounder now. Right.
Okay, I would love, don't get me wrong, if somehow the Hornets could get Marc Gasol,
Would it be a max contract? I mean, the only way you're getting Marc Gasol is if you hit him with a max contract.
And even then, I think just like Orlando did with Marcin Gortat, they match it and overpay just because they know that they'll be able to move him as an asset. It's your old asset collecting and hoarding. And I think it would be hard for Memphis to say no. I mean, if they're gonna pay max money to Rudy Gay, a wing player, who, you know, obviously has never shown that he's a winner in the NBA, they're gonna overpay for an elite 7-footer. So I guess my question then is, you swung for the fences, the outfielder caught it on the warning track. Let's say the Hornets do even throw it at him and it's matched. So are you saying that's the only move that you see as a swing for the fence? If that doesn't go down, you just blow it all up, or is there anything else that, any plan B?
If you're going after a restricted free agent, you at least have the advantage now that it's only a 3-day waiting period.
Right.
That's one of the changes to the new CBA. When a restricted free agent gets an offer, the other team has only 3 days to match when it used to be 14 days.
Yeah, men's.
So, I mean, you'll definitely have other opportunities at that point, but you're probably going to miss out on Nene. You're probably going to miss out on Tyson Chandler. You're probably going to miss out on most of the prime people. So if you're making a swing for the fences thing, like going after Marc Gasol, it is all eggs in one basket.
Okay. I guess I would ask then, what happens if somehow Memphis signs him to a huge deal at 12:01?
Well, then I'm also on the phone with Nene.
Okay. So you're all swing for the fences. There's no
right.
Three or four middle guys.
No, I mean, well, so the only other people that, I mean, so, and the reason why I'm swinging for the fences isn't necessarily because that's even how I normally think you should operate. It's just that when you look at this group of free agents, I can't see, like I said before, like the set of good guys you would need to surround those, our big three at the moment. And it's kind of stupid calling them the big three, but surround them with enough firepower. I mean, unless everything went perfect for you and you got
right.
reasonable deals on a whole bunch of different guys who you're probably not going to find reasonable deals on, I don't see any way you can do it. David West is going to come at a certain price, and then, you know, you bring in, say, Jason Richardson, you know, players like that. They're not going to – I mean, Jason Richardson made $13 million last year. If he comes in just based on past experience with players like Caron Butler and similar kind of players,
right.
he's going to still make $8 or $9 million next year. That's too much.
Right, I know.
The Hornets can't take that.
All right, well, then let me try, because my plan would be I'm more the singles hitter. I don't think that any of the home run guys are even a remote possibility unless your daddy Warbucks comes in prior to free agency somehow and just throws an amnesty gauntlet down. So I'm gonna go for more singles here. Under this scenario, I would have re-signed David West at a contract starting at about $8 million this year. Remember, I gave him the 5 years, $50 million. So it's just escalating. So I've got a little bit of room. I basically got enough room for two mid-level type contracts, one to get to the salary cap, and the second I actually so I'm going to give two mid-level type deals or a combination of smaller ones. But here are the guys that I'm looking at. Shannon Brown to me as the fourth guard on this team. I like that he could play both positions, like the athleticism, could get after it on defense, and he's shown that he's at least getting better at the three-point stroke. I think he could come for a decent price. Last year, he essentially signed a deal a little over $2 million. I don't think he's raised his value, you know, that much. So he's my fourth guard. Go ahead.
And the Hornets did go after him.
Right.
They did try to sign him last year, and he decided to stay with the Lakers to try to get him the title.
And I think he regrets that decision, because last year in L.A., he wasn't very happy for a couple of reasons. So
right.
I think he gives it a shot. Here's one that I did say last season you didn't agree on, but I'll go for it again. I think a guy that gets overlooked in this free agency due to age and injury concerns is Tracy McGrady. I don't want him to be a big part of the team. I'm talking about eighth or ninth man. Remember, I'm talking about him as a backup small forward who essentially plays the backup point guard position. I think we all saw Jarrett Jack was better off the ball last year. So my second team would be a combination of McGrady, Quincy Pondexter, and Jarrett Jack. Jarrett Jack, Shannon Brown, and Tracy McGrady. Those guys rotating in a backup role, and McGrady's the one handling the ball there. And then the last one, I think, you know, this guy, a lot of people say the two are similar, mostly because they have a similar background, but I think he's actually a better fit for the Hornets than Carl Landry, and that's Chuck Hayes. I think Chuck Hayes can be had. I think Chuck Hayes could be had for a decent price. And why I think he's better than Landry is because I don't think West and Landry could play together. Hayes is undersized as well, but he's a monster on the glass. So I actually think Hayes could play that role that they brought Landry to play in last year better than Landry claimed. I'm not saying Hayes is better than Landry. I think he would be better for this team. So those are my three free agency guys. And like I said, you've got guys who are going to get amnestied, and you could put in a waiver wire bid of $2-3 million and get one of these guys. And my four guys are Nocioni, who's either going to get amnestied or bought out from Philly. He's the nastiness that I think this team needs. If you could get him for $2-3 million, he's not worth it at seven. $2-3 million, he's worth it. Brendan Haywood, Brandon Roy, which I'm sure you know everybody's already thought about and knows, and Al Harrington. So I think all four of those guys could be amnestied. You put in a bid anywhere between $2 and $4 million on all four of those guys. Maybe you get one. Heck, maybe you get two, and you get solid value right there. So those are my singles type guys that. I guess I'm creating a Dallas Mavericks situation in which this team could compete if they picked up all the right pieces like Dallas did. Just every guy just happened to fit. The superstar took their game to the next level, and the supporting pieces all were finally comfortable and fit in their role. It's a long shot, but I'm essentially following the Dallas Mavericks 2011 formula with that team.
Okay. I laughed when you said Chuck Hayes because I actually, when I first reviewed the free agency, he was the first name I wrote down as somebody I'd love to go for. And then I looked around at, like, some information about Chuck, and apparently he's told the Houston Chronicle, like, four times that he wants to finish his career in Houston, and he's not that concerned about getting paid that much.
Right, and then when Houston throws the max at Nene and
right.
Nothing to give Chuck Hayes, I don't care what Chuck Hayes wants. But
right, so there's only one player in this entire list that I think you might be underrated, and we might be able to grab and pull in. And he's actually in my Marc Gasol plan. He was the other major piece to it. So you go for Marc Gasol, you don't worry about West. Maybe you make an offer to Landry if it's a reasonable one. And you of course move Okafor for somebody else entirely, a wing player. I want the Hornets to try to go out and grab Earl Clark from Orlando.
He's on my other list, but okay.
Cause I mean, he's young. He's had some issues in the past where people have said he's got, you know, like he's not focused all the time. But every time I've seen him play, he's been very impressive in the short amount of time he's gotten.
Are you more enamored with his potential on offense or defense?
Defense.
Yeah, okay. I'm just making sure because I feel the exact same way.
I think he's, I mean, no, Tyson's a bad, he's almost like Okafor, except he's more athletic. So, I mean, I expect him to do the Okafor kind of offense, which is, just get yourself in position to catch and turn and, you know, put a dunk down or a layup. But defensively, I think that guy has all the athletic tools you could ever want to protect the rim and help defense.
Yeah, he would need to put on weight to be able to consistently cover fours. But I see him as Ronnie Brewer plus 4 inches. So basically, a Ronnie Brewer that plays the stretch four position.
Yeah.
Very good defender, could get you garbage baskets, and maybe you could develop a little bit of offense with him, but I agree. He's on my other list of blow it up and rebuild.
And you just said, by the way, the very last piece of my Marc Gasol one, Ronnie Brewer. I have a feeling, because I don't know, I just get the feeling he's so underappreciated in Chicago that he will be either made easily available via trade, or maybe even bought out, amnestied, whatever.
Yeah.
And I think Ronnie Brewer, even though he cannot shoot to save his life from distance, the man is so clever working the spaces along the baseline, and he's defensively really, really good. I think that he would be a fantastic guard for this team.
So I guess I'm trying to figure out, your team that you've constructed in your dream scenario, Marc Gasol is your second banana, and some unnamed wing player that we get for Okafor is your third best player. So that's our big three in your new dream scenario constructed team.
With Earl Clark, kind of Carl Landry, power forward position, offense, defense, and Ronnie Brewer doing defense on the wing.
Right. So you're looking for that team, and with Oklahoma City up and coming and with the other powers in the West, you like a team of with Marc Gasol as your second banana and relying on Earl Clark to have a breakthrough. You think could potentially lead to a dynasty.
I have the feeling that it would be much easier to operate with that team and to grow it into a dynasty than anything we have right now.
Okay. All right, so how about we go the other way? How about, Chris Paul is saying all the right things in the media, as we expected to. Maybe they're sincere, maybe they're not. But under this scenario, let's assume that he went directly to Demps, told him there's absolutely no chance he comes back next year. He'll obviously honor his contract, but he would prefer to be traded. The sooner the better. We're going to obviously talk Chris Paul tomorrow and exactly what we would get back, but free agency starts December 9th. It's not waiting for you. You haven't made a Chris Paul deal yet. You've got to jump into free agency knowing this. Who are some guys you target? Is it the same kind of guys, or are you looking at different guys under that scenario?
And this is going to probably disappoint you a lot. I'm honestly looking to sign veteran guys for very short contracts who are going to make sure that I tank. I might look at doing something like trying to grab Earl Clark again to get somebody to fill in. But honestly, it never seems to work. You never see the team that falls apart grabbing mid-range decent players that are really young and then turning into anything. Because if they get enough mid-range decent players that are young, they end up winning 25, 30 games, and you gotta have those top draft picks. So it's almost worse to get several young talents that could turn into something good. And I'd rather just like go out and sign Rasul Butler and Jared Jeffries.
I disagree. With as much talent as there is in the NBA, you can't tell me, the Minnesota Timberwolves just had Kevin Love have a historic season, and they still sucked. And you're trying to tell me that if the Hornets pick up Earl Clark, it might be dangerous because he might be too good that he gets those 25 wins. When Kevin Love and Michael Beasley and, quite a bit of talent that they have there.
Where? Kevin Love is the only above average player on that entire team.
I think five, six players on that team that are far better. Have had far better careers than
I'm sure Michael Beasley will be paid more, but he's a complete loser, and he will always be a complete loser, and he's a bad basketball player.
Okay, but anyway, I don't think Earl Clark is gonna prevent you from being a 16 win team, if that's the difference. But okay, I see what you're saying, and I guess my philosophy with this was I wanted a couple of young guys that I could give minutes and possibly resurrect their career without threatening to become too good of a team. And I also wanted veterans that could basically fill the PJ Brown role for both those guys that I brought in and for any rookies that would come in. So I have a combination of the two, kind of. So my list for the, you know, without Chris Paul, as far as the veterans, I got Chuck Hayes on there again. Good guy, hard worker. I think he'd show the big men how it's done. And for the wings, I would love, if Chris Paul is gone, I'm assuming that I'm going to attach a Reeds' contract to him wherever he goes.
So you're going to get Tracy McGrady.
No, give me Shane Battier.
There's no way he's signing with the Hornets.
Oh, yeah, because...
No, he is going to the Miami Heat or the Dallas Mavericks or the Lakers, some team that's actually contending. Okay. He's not going to come to the
those
Hornets
teams,
to usher in a crap team.
Those teams are not going after him. Not going after him. But, okay, he's on my list. I could...
All right.
So Shane Battier, Chuck Hayes... And then my young guys, Earl Clark, Josh McRoberts, and Brendan Wright. I say, why not? Why not? If you could get him for, you know, I'll discuss this later, but my entire strategy, if Chris Paul goes, we'll talk about this on Friday, but if he goes, my entire strategy is to be lining up at 2013, 2014, with a bunch of young guys and a ton of cap space, because that's when the punitive taxes kick in. And if you want to see a team's dumping players and staying away from high priced free agents, it's going to start to happen in 2013, 2014. I think teams will continue to give stupid contracts this year and perhaps next. But I think that's going to be the off season. If we are in a throwaway and rebuild, that will be the Hornets off season. So give Brandon Wright a 2-year contract and just give it a shot at, you know, maybe you get an asset, maybe you get nothing.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that.
And then the last one that I'll say that's on this list is I could see a lot of teams being aggressive in free agency and trades, whatever. Those guys are going to come back from China. Would it be the worst thing in the world to be the one team that had, you know, saved up for when those guys come back? The Hornets don't spend any money, and Wilson Chandler comes back from China, and Denver has, you know, thrown a bunch of money a bunch of different ways. Give him a nice-sized contract. Denver can't match, and he's yours. So he's the other guy I'd buy without CP3 list. He's young enough that, you know, he'll still be good in 2 years. You know, good character. So that's my without CP3 list.
Okay. So let me hit you with something else that I was thinking about. So there is a list of restricted. My opening statement was all the ones that I kind of like are restricted, which also, of course, includes Marc Gasol. It didn't stop me from throwing a huge-ass contract at him.
Right.
But there are a lot of restricted free agents in here, and not all of them are going to get fold over with tremendous contracts. There'll probably be a few that you can grab at a decent contract. So which of these ones are most excite you? And I'm looking at wing players because we're set. If we bring back David West, we're set in the other positions. We most need a shooting guard / small forward, somebody to come in one of those two positions and give us some actual efficient, you know, scoring. So, if you have the choice between Aaron Aflalo, Reggie Williams, Thaddeus Young, and there was one more, and I'm missing it. Oh, and bringing back our boy Marcus Thornton. Would you make a play for any of them? Assuming that it won't be an out-of-this-world contract, but it'll have to be slightly overpaying, probably, at least.
Well, I don't think your question's fair, because I think one guy on that list is going to get an out-of-this-world contract. And I have a bet from you, and we had it on the last podcast.
And who is it do you think is going to get an out-of-the-world contract?
Thaddeus Young is going to get – I think he's going to get more money than David West.
Are you serious? Oh, that's right. I remember was having this discussion, and I thought it was so outlandish I probably blocked it from my mind.
Yeah, and I'm telling you that when it happens that – you're going to say, well, that team's just stupid. Are you going to give some excuse? But it doesn't matter. Thaddeus Young is going to get David West money close to it or more than it. So it's not fair to have him on that list, in my opinion. Of course, if I could get him for $5 or $6 million a year, I would jump all over that.
All right, let's toss him out then. Okay. No Thaddeus Young. We'll replace him with Nick Young, who, by the way, I left him off because I hate his game. Yeah. He's probably my least favorite option.
And that's why I think Thaddeus Young gets almost twice the money that Nick Young gets. It's all said and done. It would clearly be a flalo for me. I don't think it would be anybody else, and it would be a flalo for me in both situations, with Chris Paul or without him.
So do you think a flalo? I mean, everybody seems to like a flalo, but I don't know if anyone's like in love with a flalo. So do you think he's going to be one of those players who gets like, you know, some crazy? I mean, and I'm not even saying like, I mean, like a Wesley Matthews deal from last year, which for those of you who don't remember, Wes Matthews got a huge front-loaded deal. It was a mid-level exception, but Portland put every penny into that first year that they could,
right.
so that Utah wouldn't match because they were in the luxury tax. Do you think? So I don't even necessarily think that's outlandish for him. It's still a mid-level deal. Do you think he's going to get like, you know, $8 or $9 million a year, or do you think he's going to be a mid-level guy and available at that? Because if he is, that's a guy you absolutely want.
See, here's the danger. I think if he signs for a mid-level deal, he'll want to go to another team other than the Hornets. And if he signs for $8 million, the Hornets can't afford. I think Aflalo is going to get more overall money than Jason Richardson.
Mm-hmm. You think so?
I didn't say per year. I said overall. So.
Oh, right. Oh, okay. I got you. No, I got you.
So I think, you know, he's going to – I think he would have 12 to 15 mid-level deals on the table for him. I don't think he's picking up the one that says Hornets. So I think in order for the Hornets to get him, they would have to do what they traditionally do and overpay. And at that point, $7-8 million, I wouldn't want him. And I think – I don't even know if that would get him. So I think that'll be tough. And obviously Denver would match a Wesley Matthews-type contract. So – I don't think he's in play. I mean, this is what's kind of depressing is it's very hard to talk yourself, if you're trying to be realistic, talk yourself into anybody, you know, that really could be a difference maker in this free agent market. I really think that the best value the Hornets could get because of the fact that not everybody could bid and because of the fact that you're not competing directly with anybody else. Like, you know, if Brandon Roy is amnestied and he's on the waiver wire, he can't say no to the Hornets.
Yeah, you have to bid for him. I mean, you got to put at least a bid in.
So I really think that if the Hornets go for it this year, my guess would be that the best player that they wind up getting in the offseason would be from this amnesty waiver wire. That's my instinct on it because I think you're starting to go a little – I think you're going to the Shannon Browns when you start to begin talking yourself into, okay, this is the guy the Hornets could get because they won't have as many competitors and it'll be in their price range. So
I think the Hornets should get Baron Davis and bring him back.
Yeah, but I don't know if Cleveland wants to let him go.
I think they should trade Chris Paul and bring back the amnesty Baron Davis to run the team. It'd be awesome.
Yeah, yeah. The good news is, though, that these free agent classes get a little bit more exciting in the future. And like I said, if the Hornets play their cards right, you know, they could be big free agent players down the line, but I don't know how much people want to hear that because we're still going to have to sit through all these games if the Hornets become an also-ran.
So let me ask you, I have one ambush for you.
You gotta
come up with it quickly.
Uh-oh.
So you find out that Dell Demps has a deal to drop Ariza to another team and take back zero salary.
Right.
Which clears enough room now for essentially almost two max deals.
Oh, and David West is gone too?
Well, David West could be one of your max deals. So, David, I mean, that clears enough salary space that it's something like $24 million, which is almost close to two max deals. And knowing you then have to fill out the rest of your team with minimum salaries and one exception, like which is like $2.5 million, is there anybody in this class that you would throw a pair of max deals at and that you think you could turn yourself as a contender doing? So basically, it's our Miami Heat moment, and this is the class we get to do it with.
Ugh, that's just a disgusting premise.
Because basically, somehow in your mind, you've decided that if we give Chris Paul his own big three, he's hanging out with us.
There's no, you can't give him a big three in this lineup. What I would honestly do if you said that I had money to spend, my top two targets in this class would be DeAndre Jordan and Thaddeus Young. If I could get those two for a combined $22 million a year, give me just two athletic young guys, tell Chris Paul that, you know, he has an alley-oop partner, a defender that could, you know, do multiple things, and trust me, we're going to continue to be looking for more complimentary pieces. Just stay with us. You still got plenty of years in this league. These guys are going to be excellent compliments, and those would be the two guys. Those two at $22 million combined, that's where I would spend my money. I'd look to move Okafor for that wing player you were talking about, and that's where I go.
So you have a lot of faith in DeAndre Jordan, don't you? Because that's like the third time you've mentioned him.
I have a lot of faith in him with Chris Paul. The same way that Tyson Chandler was crap in Chicago.
Right.
Tyson Chandler didn't necessarily become a better player. Chris Paul, it's just some guys fit together, you know? Reggie Wayne sucks this year without Peyton Manning. DeAndre Jordan with Chris Paul, I think, you know, would do very good things. And if the Clippers are as, you know, Google eyes over Dwight Howard as they report, I don't think they match, and he's ours. Thaddeus Young, that would just be, if you gave me big money, those would be the two.
Okay, so essentially, I think we can wrap this podcast up with the statement that we're fucked.
Well, I don't know. Tune in tomorrow, and maybe we'll have some more optimism when it comes to CP3. I mean, we have been building up to that all week.
Right.
I have a couple questions.
Oh, okay. He emerges.
Hey, wait, you're there?
I've been taking notes the entire time.
All right, are you going to ambush us?
Yeah, it's ambush.
A little.
All right, hit us.
Okay, so...
No, we're not signing Peja.
No, so... Ryan, your team, assuming Chris Paul says he's going to stay, was Gasol, some wing player, Brewer, and Paul?
Yeah, right? And Landry Clark power forward combo.
That's right. Clark was in there. So how does this team look and play differently than the one we had last year in a way that's going to say, yeah, let me stick around because this team's only going to get better?
So here's my take on... So you basically upgraded Okafor to Gasol. Gasol is more efficient of a scorer. He has more other abilities. He actually is an equal rebounder. He's also, I think, personally, probably better defensively in a lot of situations. Then... Landry and Clark, I mean, so this is the whole thing about David West. David West excels at nothing. And if you can get a good combined offense-defensive thing out of your power forward, I think you can do better than David West. So I think that's also an upgraded position. Whoever the wing player is that we bring in for Okafor, I don't think you can do worse than Ariza and Bellinelli. And Ronnie Brewer, I think, is a good player. So, the team won 46. So let's just be conservative and say this is
you know, it's a total of like an 8-win improvement or 9-win improvement. We're talking 55, and that's typically where you need to be a contender, or at least have a shot.
So I would think in the past we've had pretty good starters, and our bench was wafer thin. And the second, how many years of second quarters do you want me to remind you of, right?
So are you saying, were you foreshadowing there, and are you saying the answer is Von Wafer?
No. I don't think those words would leave my mouth. But
okay, I'm sorry. I got excited there because we did not bring up Von Wafer in this podcast, and that's just shocking to me. But go ahead.
I actually spared you the meaning of life reference with that. Wafferine?
No? Wow. You got a lot of people Googling right now, Jason. Go ahead.
That's Monty Python's The Meaning of Life, folks. Do we have room after all these moves for somebody to be around the bench besides Pondexter and Jack? If that's who it is right now. I mean, granted, we can fill up with men players, but I mean, we saw where that got us for a couple of years.
I don't see any reason why you wouldn't be able to bring back our good buddies Willie Green and Jason Smith. So it can't be worse than what we had last year.
Fair enough. So
we wouldn't have Aaron Gray. And some people may say that's a good thing, and that might be a bad thing.
Frankly, we didn't have him for the first half last year, and we had just as many in-game win streaks in the first half as the second half.
It's true.
So I have no idea. Michael, your strategy seems to more address the bench, besides the starters a bit, but upgrade the bench. That's a fair characterization?
I wouldn't say bench, but I would say spots 4 through 8. So it's okay. Not technical who's going to start, who's going to come off the bench. But yeah, I don't think that there's any big three type of guys to get the Hornets. So I want to make 4 through 8 really strong because that, you know, Dallas just swarmed the Lakers with depth last year. And I guess if I got to follow a blueprint, I'm following last year's champions.
So you can take this as praise or otherwise, but I tend to think this package, this kind of package that you put together here is the way I would go. I think Chris Paul is a guy who wants to have different kinds of toys and weapons out there to use. So if you find yourself in different situations, you can put many, many different combinations of packages out there. You figure out how they work. You can you have more movable pieces during the year to make trades, right, which we believe is the strength of our GM. I like this kind of package better than the Gasol plan. But if you kind of believe that Paul is going to go, grabbing a big player now, carry it through the lean times to build around piece by piece, has some wisdom as well.
See, I guess I'm of the other thinking, and probably talk about more of this in tomorrow's podcast, but and Ryan pretty much said this. If Paul goes, I don't want another big player. I don't necessarily want another good player. I want to be god awful. And the sooner the better, because the next draft class is going to be one of the better ones that we've seen lately. I mean, I see at least 3 guys who could be future definite franchise guys and another 8 to 12 that could be all-stars. So I don't want, like, so if Chris Paul is going to leave, I don't want Marc Gasol and Rajon Rondo because that's a 30-win team, and then I'm really screwed. So that's why I wouldn't go with Ryan's strategy. I don't think either one of our strategies really works because I think continuity is what wins in this league, and both of us are turning over the rosters too much for the second year in a row. But, you know, I wouldn't want good players if Chris Paul is leaving.
You couldn't get the picks through the trade with Chris? Unload Chris.
You could get one, but our own pick wouldn't be. I'd rather have our own pick and another pick both be good. I under no scenario do I want to be a 28 to 38 win team.
See, Denver made New York dance and didn't say, go do all this work for me. No, it's not good enough. Go do all this work for me. I don't understand why we couldn't have two or three teams trying to line up something to get us a bunch of picks, dump the assets somewhere else, give us expiring some picks.
Maybe we will, but that's for tomorrow, future man.
Ah, okay.
That's right. Hold on. We'll get to that.
Yeah. All right. I mean, I guess, like I said, not the greatest free agent class. I really wish we knew for 100% sure who was getting amnestied, because I really think that's where the Hornets could get their bargains. We won't know that, but I would just suggest people really pay attention to that process and how that's going to work, because I think that could be really interesting and provide Hornets with some quality players at some cheaper prices who are probably pretty hungry to prove themselves, because that's embarrassing. I mean, these guys all have egos. We know that. We obviously saw this in this negotiation. These guys are basically going to be put out in front of all their peers saying, we think you're so bad, we're going to pay you not to play. I don't know. I might want one of those guys on my side if it's the right guy.
Would you touch Shard Lewis with a 10-foot pole, knowing he's not coming to you with his steroids?
I've always thought that he would be, I would love to see a stretch four on this team. I mean, to me, I think Rashard Lewis would be Jason Smith with far more range. And if Chris Paul, at least for a short period of time, could make Jason Smith a decent player, at least offensively in this league, I think Chris Paul, could really do good things with Rashard Lewis. So I would.
By the way, that thing right there, hey, Jason, you got to help me get an interview with Monty next time you're talking to him. Because I want to ask him the question. Because it's got to be by design. It's got to be system. When our good buddy Jason Smith, when he played in Philadelphia, could shoot like 37% from three, why are we having him line up two steps inside the three-point line to jack those damn long twos up? I mean, is two steps? I mean, Michael, you play.
Yeah.
Is two steps really that big of a difference?
I know logically it doesn't make sense, but I swear to God, it's all the difference in the world. It's so weird with range, and I mean, just think about it. Like, Jason, I'm drawing a blank here on the philosophy theory I want to use of the. Cut everything in half, the
Zeno's,
arrow.
Zeno's paradoxes.
Zeno's paradox, yeah. But, I mean, by that logic, why wouldn't 22 and 26 feet, you know, be that different? Why doesn't everybody shoot it from where Jimmy Fredette does in college? I mean, there is a point in which it's a difference, and I've never been able to understand why for myself. But I swear to God, right now I could go out and probably drain 17 out of 20 18-footers, and I would probably go 7 of 20 from 3. So weird. Not saying I'm Jason Smith. I'm much better looking, but I'm just saying that, guys have their spots. Guys, I mean, yeah, look at Paul Pierce. Paul Pierce did win the three-point shooting contest, but we all know where his spot on the court is.
Right.
And it's just weird. Guys have spots.
Yeah, I mean, these guys aren't doing physics calculations out there, right? I mean, it's all muscle memory, like juggling or something like that, right? Like you can not look and do these things, right? Or like people can text or whatever without even looking because they know the muscle memory. So you get out there and it's like you just make the shot, and I think you find the distance that fits your motion rather than the other way around.
It's and that, and it's somebody else is controlling your long-term muscle memory, because the first thing a good coach tells you is take the shots in practice that you're going to take in the game. And I'm assuming Jason Smith has always been tall. I think any coach would tear his a-hole a new one if he was jacking up threes in practice. So, you know, your muscle memory is tied into what you've always taken, and you're just not going to take those shots as frequently growing up.
Well, Ryan would argue that if he took a couple steps back, he could take 40%. He can make him, you know, at like a 30% less rate and still help the team more.
Oh, it's a much better, it's a much more efficient shot. I mean, I think Ryan will go off right now on the long two. I don't think he hates
him
anymore, but
yeah, I'm corking the battle. I'm just trying to.
No, he's right in theory, but I'm just saying in practice that it's just relatively different, and yeah, but all right.
Okay. So I guess we're done with this uplifting, happy podcast where we talked about how the Hornets will be a contender in less than 3 weeks. And tomorrow, you guys get to hear all about Chris Paul.
Yep.
Have a good night, everybody.
Good night. Let's have a long time for me each and every day. Ballin' in the party town, ain't nothing but a party.